Hey everybody, and welcome to The Void, a show dedicated to filling the void between being an employee and becoming self-employed. Most people refer to starting their own company as taking the leap, as if they're blindly jumping off a cliff and into the unknown. This show is here to help you understand that it doesn't have to be that way. As always, if you like what you're hearing on the show, please do us a favor and help share The Void with somebody else who might be wanting to start their own company. We saw an opportunity to help others understand that self-employment is well within your reach, and just as our businesses have grown organically and by word of mouth, we want this show to grow the same way. So if you see somebody asking questions about starting their own service-based business, please do us a favor and send them a link to the show. I'm your host, Mitch Smedley, and with me as always is David Hilton.
Hey, buddy.
Hey.
This morning, I'm getting Layla ready for school, right?
Yeah.
She comes in there. She's like, Dad, I need a hair band from mom and this and ball. Because Janine's not home. She works nights, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, right?
Right.
So she's in there fucking with me, right? She goes into the bathroom. She's looking around. She's like, Dad, why don't you wear your bracelets anymore? I was like, what do you mean? I was like, I wear them all the time. She's like, you haven't worn them in months. I was like, okay. I said, we'll walk in all my nightstand and grab them. So today I've got the...
The old ones, the new ones?
The menagerie of old bracelets. And then I have my Roger Wakefield one. She was like, where'd you get this? I was like, well, he spoke at our event that we had. And she was like, well, don't you want to wear it? I was like, I have been wearing it. Well, you should wear it today. I was like, okay.
Okay.
So I am full on pimping everyone else's shit today. Yeah. Oh, man. So it's funny. Like some mornings she's like tired, dead to the world. Other morning she wakes up and it's like she's had crack and she's like, Dad, you get ready for school. I got to do this. I'm like, hey, you don't have to tell me. I know you have to get ready for school, baby. I love you. Let's get dressed. Let's get it going. She's in there like beating me with a hammer.
Yesterday morning, Grant's up early and then he walks by to go to school, like walks by the bedroom to go to school and he's like hair done and wearing cologne, right?
Yeah.
And then today.
Yeah.
The bus comes and goes, and he's still asleep. It's like, so yeah, some mornings they wake up and they're on crack, and other mornings they're zombies.
Yeah, it's like, what are we doing? And it, like in her defense when she's tired, so, which is weird because last night she has soccer till 8:30, and then they have, she's going to play flag football, like an all-girl flag football with just her soccer teammates and a couple other girls. So they have that right after at the same place.
Yeah.
Dude, we're not done until 9:30. By the time we get home, she eats something. Like, it's 10:30. When she goes to bed at 8 and wakes up.
Oh, yeah.
She goes to bed at 10:30, 11, wakes up. Hey, Dad.
Yeah.
Dad, why aren't you? Dad. Baby, take it down a notch. It's 6:30 in the morning. Like, we got plenty of time. It's just like, I can't. I just feel like I'm so lost raising her now. Not like raising her, but like. Knowing how she's going to be and act, it's like every day is a roll of the dice. It's like, what, you know what it's like? It's like being married.
Yeah. Well, like boys.
It's like being married to a redhead, but your dice doesn't have any threes or fours on it. And you're not going to roll a seven. It's just like, what's going to happen? You just never know what's going to happen, man. It's nuts.
Yeah.
She's driving me crazy.
Boys, their emotional swings are like hour by hour. Girls, it's like day by day.
Yeah, I'd say it's, you know what, that makes a lot of sense. Like it's every day or every 2 days. There's a swing.
Boys, they could be like crazy happy 1 hour and then like be crying the next. Girls,
it sounds
like
my life.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just nuts.
Just emotional.
Yep. Speaking of boys. Mason turned 16 today.
I know. I texted
him. Passed his driver's test, got his license.
Proud of the young man. He's I texted him this morning pretty early. It wasn't that early. Maybe 7:30 or so. Yep. I was like, hey, happy birthday, buddy. Yep. Let's see what you got going on.
Just got back from setting up. Now that he's 16, he can have his own bank accounts and everything. So he's got all his bank accounts set up for his mowing business.
I believe
he's got mowing jobs to do tonight.
Nice.
Like he stacked them up. Like I will get my license. I will pass. And I will be driving the mowing jobs on my own.
I mean,
day of my 16th birthday.
How much do we talk about mentality of I'm going to make this happen is the most important part? That's great. I've been tagging him in posts on Facebook.
Yeah.
For some reason, him and I weren't friends. I mean, I shouldn't say for some reason. I hadn't added him because I didn't want him to see all the stupid shit that I say.
Right.
Like, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But like, I've seen him in the community groups. Like, hey. Mason Smedley, or Mitch Smedley. Mitch Mason Smedley. We're tagging both of you.
He's still trying to get it figured out. He made a post on Sunday about mowing, and he got booted, and he got like a 24-hour ban.
Because they only allow you on Mondays. Yep. I have ate that Trish's ass that runs that thing. Yeah. I'm like, it's amazing how when someone does it that you know, you'll allow that to roll through. But when it's someone you don't know, and it's like, I posted on there one day about just, I have extra chicken eggs if anyone wants them.
Yeah.
Well, you can't have a business post. I'm like, it's not a business. I just have extras. I'm trying to like give them to the community, you bitch.
Dude,
like,
I posted.
What the fuck?
So that old go-kart that I bought?
Yeah.
So it had like an IndyCar style body on it.
Yeah.
And spoiler. And it's small, right? It's go-kart sized. And it's been sitting behind my house forever. And I posted it up like, this would make great wall art for a man cave or something. Like, it'd just be cool to be sitting up on the wall, right? I don't want it. But
yeah,
somebody
care.
Would want it. We and so I posted it.
We should hang it up in here.
Yeah. I posted it for free. Like, it's at the end of the driveway.
Yeah, if you want it.
If anybody wants it, and I got slapped on the wrist and got a warning.
It's so dumb.
Because you're not allowed to post things for free at curb. And it's like, okay.
Isn't that part of the community page, like, its job?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is to allow
the
community.
I just went to the Grain Valley page and posted it there, and somebody took
it. It's like allowed. It's to allow the community to come together.
Yeah.
And you're going to, like, it's so dumb.
Yeah.
The people that are running it are just dumb.
Well, it's with absolute power, corruption, right? So,
well,
like,
with absolute power becomes Karens with nothing to do.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it really, it's just, it's yep. is bad. And the yep. Blue Springs, you know, the Lee Summit one's not bad. The Grain Valley one's not bad.
I can't stand the Lee Summit one. It is nothing
it,
but.
Is it bad?
It's
I haven't been on it in a long time.
It's the Lee Summit community group. Over half of the posts are anonymous, and over
we
half,
know how mad that makes.
Well, you. Right. But then over half,
I can hear Dave Navin right now.
Over half Nave of Han. The posts are like that stereotypical white liberal woman. That it's like, I mean, I saw one today that made me roll my eyes. Of like, this lady was looking for very specific business services that, like, you should just go to Google and find them. But she's like,
Google it.
Yeah. She's asking the community instead of going to Google. And then she's like, posting anonymously to avoid the hate comments. So please be nice. And benefits if it's a woman black owned business. And it's like,
that,
like,
we're going to get into a whole nother thing here. That in itself is racist.
Yes.
What if it's a Mexican woman owned business? That's racist towards her.
What if it's the exact product or service you're looking for, but it's owned by a white man? The company's owned by a white man. Like, are you going to let race stand in the way of you getting what you want?
No.
Like it's
if
just
it's
dumb.
If it's the best stuff, buy it. Who cares who made it? When you say, I want it to be a white gal, or I want it to be a black gal, or I want it to be a Latina gal, you are racist.
Yeah.
You are a racist.
Yeah.
It's just so dumb, man.
It's just dumb.
It is dumb.
I left that group for a long time, and then I kept getting tagged and stuff. And every time you get tagged, there comes an invite to come back to the group.
You need to be in it for your business.
Yeah, I don't
I know
think
you
I
don't
do.
Want to.
Like, I look at all the big companies in the area, and they're not in there pushing their shit. I'm real close to, like, pulling. Like, I know as a staple, like, we talk about all the time in this show, using community groups to get your business off the ground.
Well, you're
and going.
Over that limit, though.
Right.
Our
business
at the next
is to
level.
The size now where community group type clients aren't our ideal client. And so I'm considering pulling completely out of it, pulling out of all of them, except for the Blue Springs one because I live here. So,
well, it's different. We went to school here. You live here.
Right.
I live just on the out. Like, it's weird too, because I always wondered about people that lived in Independence. Like, why would you say you're from Independence and you're this and you're that? And it's like, it's just hometown pride.
Yeah.
Like, even Blue Springs, I'm like, Blue Springs is kind of a dumpster fire the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And I don't want to tell people, but I'm still like, yeah, I'm from Blue Springs. It's like the first thing out of my mouth.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
It's weird.
But I do want to say one more thing before we get moving.
Mm-hmm.
I know we don't pimp a lot of stuff on here, but Roger Wakefield was gracious enough to come to our event.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't charge us anything.
Right.
Was an amazing person to talk to. Had amazing knowledge. So if you're listening to this podcast, look up Roger Wakefield on YouTube and follow him if you're in the construction industry.
Yeah.
He's great.
Yes.
He was fantastic. fantastic.
And if you're looking to do anything social media content wise, look him up.
Yeah.
And mirror what he's doing.
Yeah. And you can mirror. He does have a program too.
Yep.
And we don't have an affiliate with him or anything
that.
He's a great
dude. $1,000, I think, for his course, and he'll teach you how to be successful on YouTube.
Yeah. He's great. He's great to work with. He's great to talk to. He is a very down to earth person. And when I met him, I kind of, full transparency, when Mitch said he had him and this and that, I had reservations. He's probably a weirdo. He's probably this. He's probably that. No.
No.
He's super down to earth, a very genuine person, has a really great program, and is doing really great things for the trade. So take 5 minutes, look him up, and at least watch a few of his videos.
Yeah.
If you listen to us.
Yep.
So he's great. And then another thing, Dan Miller,
mm-hmm.
Davidson Technologies, sent us some swag.
Yep.
I'm wearing mine today.
Got to rep it.
Oh, he sent us t-shirts in our own size,
hoodies,
sweatshirts in our own size, flat bill caps.
And beanies. Yeah.
Two different styles of beanies,
yeah,
by the way. He does, so he was in Tradewinds, and he quit about a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
A month ago, something like that. And then a couple weeks ago, messaged me and said, hey, I got my new logo done. I got this done. I'm going to send you guys some swag. He sends us, dude, I get the box. It's like this big.
Giant box.
It's freaking huge. The guy is a great business owner,
mm-hmm.
super down to earth, very friendly,
yeah,
and has a super niche market.
Yeah.
So he's in, what did you tell me? Palo Heights?
Palos.
Palos Heights, which is outside of Chicago.
Yep.
They do, this isn't exactly what they do, but they do TV installs. They do whole house entertainment. They do smart homes. They do motorized blinds,
yep,
inside of that home space. Like if you want to have a smart home, they do that.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's new, aftermarket, whatever. Like we don't pimp a lot of guys on here, but man, there aren't a lot of people that do that.
Yeah.
And he's in a really good market for doing that. So if you, for some weird reason, I'm going to send him this stuff.
Yeah.
If you're in the Chicago area and you're like, man, I want a smart home.
Yeah.
He is the dude.
He is
to
the resource.
Call.
Yeah.
He, it's so weird. He was like, hey, cause I had been pimping him in our calls. Like, hey, I need to figure it out. This and that, blah, blah. And I sent him a message the other day. He's like, dude, I don't have to come down there. You can literally FaceTime me or Zoom call and we can walk through your house and I can tell you what to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I was like, all right. So he's going to get ready to do my house, hopefully.
Yeah.
So, or just at least tell me what to do.
Right.
And then I can run the stuff and figure it out. Cause it's, to be honest, it's over my head a little bit. Like how that stuff is all integrated and works together and everything. Super cool dude.
He's also a really good
Dan Miller baby
testament to the fact that Tradewinds is not a, it doesn't have to be a forever thing. We've had quite a few clients come through Tradewinds and they don't quit necessarily. I prefer to more or less refer to it like graduating out of Tradewinds. Like,
yeah,
Tradewinds has a niche and that's to get your business to a really healthy level. And then once your business gets to a certain level, it makes sense for you to move on to a more appropriate level business coach. And so we want to get you to like the $1 to $3 million a year point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be different for everybody. We're all going to plateau at different spots based off of our drive, market conditions, everything else. But we're going to get you to there. And then once you're there, you can move on to a more formal coach. And so Dan's a great representative of that.
That
he came in, he got the foundational things he needed, he grew, and now he's on to bigger and better things.
You know, it's crazy. Like we have, I'll just bring up Vita for an example because we had a call with him this morning. He, they're way above that.
Yeah.
But what got them there isn't what we teach.
Right.
So he's in our group learning and is going to use that information to be even
higher.
Higher than that. So it's just, it's interesting the more groups I see and the more people I talk to about what guys are really looking for in the different groups.
Right.
Or the different coaching facilities. You know, it's just, some guys need, on a scale of 1 to 10, some guys need stuff that's at the 2 level. Some mm-hmm. guys need stuff that's at the 8 level, but they already know stuff that's at the 10 level.
Yeah.
We're just
plugging holes and filling gaps.
Yeah. We're all at a different level, which I think it's what makes Tradewinds really. I didn't mean for this to be a Tradewinds ad, but it's what makes Tradewinds really great.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Speaking of Tradewinds, we're going to share one piece of information.
We are?
Yeah.
Of, okay.
Of one of the things we talk about inside of Tradewinds, and it's because of an email we got to. Careful.
I'm telling you, I had the flu. It's been 4 weeks. I'm still coughing stuff up.
Yeah.
No joke, pun intended, guys. God damn it. I'm going to get 4 emails from that.
Coughing stuff up.
Yeah.
So we had somebody email us in, and their question is, or their answer is actually something that we work with people in Tradewinds about. So,
read it to me.
Question is, I've come to a question that I'm sure I'm not the first to ask. How do I factor my time spent on a job when calculating my gross profit margin? Also, what is a good target range for gross profit margins? How do you calculate markup on materials for small items? As small items can have a large markup, where
a little broken.
Small items can have large markup where tap where the customer can almost get it as cheap as I can. I think what he's saying is
he's saying, how can I mark it up?
How can I mark
have
it up
that price when the customer can go to Home Depot and get it for cheaper than I can get it for? That's
I know you aim really for asking. Set rates, but on small maintenance jobs, that isn't always practical. I do charge a set rate where I can. Just finished our first financial year, and the accountant said you're doing very well, in quotes. So something you guys have said must have stuck with me.
Are you tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? The Void Podcast has negotiated exclusive rates for the Void listeners. This program's tailored for trade businesses like yours. And if you're using House Call Pro, switch and you can expect to save $80 for every 10,000 you process per month. Don't let high processing fees drain your profits. Visit empowerpayments.com/the void or call us at 913-423-1265 now and unlock your savings.
This guy's name's Tim, Kiwi Tim, actually. He's emailed in before.
Where's he from, does it say?
I'm
just curious. Not to throw you a curveball.
New Zealand. He is the guy that...
Oh, yeah. They said we could red stag hunt.
Yes.
If he's the guy that said we could stag hunt, you know what? I don't want to get in a whole thing here, but like we've been trying to put hunts together for the Tradewinds guys.
Yeah, we might need to
pull
that
off. Dude,
you
better be careful.
Yeah.
Like we may just show up with 20. Like, hey, buddy.
So a couple of questions within this email, and we'll work through them here.
Okay, let's take them one at a time.
Yeah, how do I factor my time spent on a job when calculating my gross profit margin? And what is a good target range for gross profit margin? And then he talks about material markup and everything else. So I'm going to actually answer these in reverse order.
I was going to say, you'd have to go reverse.
Yeah, so material markup. In our Tradewinds price book, what we do is we mark up small items a lot, and then we mark up large items a little. In other words, a $3 item, we might mark it up by 200%, 300%. We might sell a $3 item for $6.
I have it right here.
Okay.
So a less than $5 is a 0.32 divisor. So that would be 68% on anything under $5. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, kind of. So a $5 item, when you divide that by 0.32, you're selling that item for $15.
Yes.
So that's what I was saying. The small items, $5 and less, we're like tripling the price on that.
Yes. And then $10 to $50 item is a 0.62 divisor.
So that means a $20 item divided by 0.62. That means a $20 item we're selling for $32.
Yes. 5 to 50 is a 0.72.
5 to 50?
50 to 500, I'm sorry.
50 to 500. Okay,
I misspoke. I apologize. I'm trying to look through my mic thing here.
Yeah, so 50 to 500, let's just say a $100 item then is 0.72.
0.72 divisor.
So yeah, a $100 item we're selling for 138.
Yep, and then the greater than $500 is a 0.82.
So
that's an 18%.
Let's just call a $600 item divided by 0.82. So a $600 item would be selling for $731. Now, how we're doing that, that is not the pre-tax cost of that item.
No.
So if something's $5 post-tax. Plus tax, we need to find out the post-tax price of that item, and then we mark it up from there.
Yep.
Now, we also don't sell direct material to consumers. When you're a flat rate pricing company, you're marking up material, and then you're adding that material cost into your flat rate calculations for the sale price to the customer.
Yeah.
And so you don't, like, customers don't ever see our material markup. Customers don't ever see what material costs, what we sell it at, or anything.
No, you're not showing them any of that. You're showing them, I'm replacing your stool and it costs this much.
Yeah, you're seeing a new stool for $9.95 or whatever.
Yeah.
And what goes into that $9.95 is our material, what we're charging per
markup,
task hour.
Yes.
And our materials, right?
Yeah. But you're right.
So that answers the material markup side of things. And also, don't ever feel bad about charging more for material than what somebody could go buy it for if they do it themselves. That's the rule of the world. You'll save money if you do it yourself. That is the rule of the world. I just paid $800 to get a transmission leak fixed. I could have done it myself, but I did the time versus reward thing, and it wasn't worth it for me to do it myself.
Well, people don't realize, I shouldn't say they don't realize, I think they know and they just don't factor it in. It takes you time to go up to the supply house, order the parts,
right?
Get the parts, stock them on your truck. That's what markup is for. It's to handle that overhead.
Markup is also to pay you for knowing what parts were even needed.
Yeah, and I've been thinking about this a lot lately. Markup doesn't even really add to your profit margin.
No.
Because, to be honest, it probably hurts your overall for you having to go get it. You know what I mean? Because, like, if you were to break down the time and the time for your guy to be there, mm-hmm. and all of that extra bullshit, you probably actually lose money.
Yeah.
If you're not marking it up enough.
Yeah. Well, and so that kind of rolls into his other questions about good profit margins and everything else. So the next question.
Pull up the benchmarks?
Well, not yet.
Okay.
The next question was.
Maybe I'll post them in the link of this video description too for everyone.
Maybe.
No, not maybe. I'll put them in there.
The next question was, how do I factor gross profit and my time and everything else? And so, when you have, let's go full-fledged business. When you have a full-fledged business and teams of people, your field team is on the gross cost side of things. And your office team is on the net cost side of things. And so a gross cost is a direct cost that it has that can be directly connected to that job. Okay?
Yeah.
So if I'm putting in a water heater at the Smith's house, my direct costs for that water heater are the water heater and all of the material for that, the field labor to put that in. Those are my direct costs.
Yeah.
My indirect costs is the truck to get them there, the fuel, the insurance, the CSR that booked the call,
yeah,
but also booked a whole lot of other calls, right? Yeah. The insurance.
Paper for the printer.
Yeah.
Ink for the printer. Like, literally all of the minutia bullshit.
Yeah.
And it takes, people underestimate how much it costs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For all of that stuff.
Yeah. And so, like, one of his questions was, how do I account for my time and everything else? Well, if you're trying to build a business that runs like a business, you have to account for your time as if you were an employee of the company. And so you have to charge accordingly as if you were, like, a lot of business owners don't charge enough they don't charge very much because they don't have employees. And so they say, well, I don't have very much overhead, so I don't have to charge this much. And that's fine.
That's wrong.
That's fine until you try to grow, and then you realize, well, I can't grow unless I charge more.
Yeah.
Because I can't pay labor unless I charge more, and I can't pay work comp unless I charge more and everything else. And so, ironically, work comp, we're going to be talking about that next. But
you okay? Yeah. I think Mitch is still mad about the work comp.
No, I'm not mad.
Yeah, you are too. Continue. I'm sorry.
So,
go ahead.
Make sure that you're charging, like, you want to factor your hourly rate appropriately. Don't have a super cheap hourly rate because you have no overhead. You have a super cheap hour, like you have no overhead, which should mean you get to benefit more. Not the customer benefits more.
We talked about this a lot. Me as a one-man show, I charged the same as the highest business did in our area.
Yeah.
Because I knew I'm doing the same work.
Yeah.
The reason I'm a one-man show is to make more money for the amount of work I have to do on the back end.
Yeah.
You should be charging the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why.
And so now that we've understood that, okay, your field labor comes out of the gross expenses.
Yeah.
And so you have I'm just going to use round numbers, a $2,000 water heater sale, and you have $600 in material.
Okay.
And so that leaves you with $1,400.
Yeah.
You're going to pay your guy, let's just call it $300 to install the water heater.
I'm just $1,100.
So now on a water heater install, you have $1,100 of gross profit.
Yep.
And $900 of cost.
Yep.
Okay. So that comes out to a 55% gross profit margin.
Yes.
Okay. And
good math, Mitch.
And so notice how we're taking the field labor that it took to install that water heater and we're putting it on the gross expenses.
Yes.
Then we take that $1,100 in gross profit and now we bring that into the company and the company has to run on that $1,100. The company doesn't get the $2,000.
No.
The company only gets the $1,100.
Yes.
So I like to break this up, and in my profit and loss meetings that I have with my guys, I remind them every single time, you guys are responsible for everything above this line, and that line is everything above gross. The line is drawn on the profit and loss statement right underneath gross profit.
Yeah.
And so
everything that it took to make this sale.
Yes.
Above.
Yeah. And so I let my guys know, you guys are responsible for top line revenue. You guys are responsible for field labor and efficiency. You guys are responsible for field material and efficient use of that. You guys deliver this gross profit number to the business. And then me as the business owner, now it's my job to spend that money efficiently and run the business, right?
Yeah.
And so, is it raining? Or is that a jet?
I have no idea.
That's a weird noise.
Let's be honest. We've been doing this podcast 3 years, TradeWinds 2 years. I've never seen you look at me and be like, do you fucking hear that?
It sounds like it's storming. So that's rain. It's pouring its ass off outside.
Man, I'm so glad. So literally, I'm standing in the garage today. And I don't want to get off topic. I'm like, I'm going to take the red car today. Like the 68 Camaro. I'm like, I'm going to get in.
Glad you didn't take it now.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't take it. Shit. It was sunny when I came over here. And that was an hour and a half ago.
Yeah.
Man, springtime in Missouri, baby.
So now here's some benchmarks that we coach within TradeWinds for most home service companies to try to achieve. Now, if you are an outlier home, like you could be a home service company, but you don't have high material costs. So that might change some of these numbers a little bit. In other words, like a house cleaner, you don't have the high material costs that plumbers and HVAC guys would, right? Electricians, no. Their material's not going to be quite as high as plumbers or HVAC guys.
No.
So these numbers will vary slightly, but what you're looking for is, your profit and loss benchmarks. And if you're in QuickBooks, you will go to, you want to favorite a certain report in QuickBooks, and that is a profit and loss as percentage of total income.
Yeah. And if you don't favorite it, it just makes it a little harder.
It's just harder to find the report. But when you favorite it, it shows up at the top. And that's what
start at the top.
You want to reference a profit and loss statement without comparing it to a percentage of revenue is not very useful. You want to know, like I don't care if your materials were $10,000 or $20,000. What were your materials in relation to revenue?
Well,
that's important.
Let's talk about it in layman's terms. The percentages you're giving now,
mm-hmm.
if you don't look at it as a percentage loss, profit and loss, it's hard to get those numbers to line up.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. So what you want is top line revenue of 100%, right? That's just, we're capturing all revenue at 100%. You want your materials to be 20% or less of your revenue. Okay. Yes. So if your top line revenue is 100 grand, you want to be spending 20 grand or less in materials. I typically run 14 to 16%, somewhere in that area.
Yeah. HVAC companies run higher.
HVAC is going to be 20, 22 somewhere.
Yeah.
Field labor. Field labor, you want your field labor to be 20% of your total revenue.
And we try to teach everyone that regardless of their company.
Yeah. And some days that's high, some days that's low. It just kind of depends on the types of jobs you're doing.
It's a fluctuating stat for sure.
Yeah. So just being real, so like drain augers are going to be, you're gonna spend a lot more on field labor for drain augers than you would like water heaters. Your labor percentage is going to be higher on drain augers. Because on a water heater, you have the material cost to bump up the top line revenue number, whereas on a drain auger, there is no material.
No.
Very little, anyway.
Zero.
I think in our drain augers, we have $10 for consumables factored into every drain auger. So that way we're covering things like rags and...
Rubber gloves, like
cables,
yeah.
Eventually, you know, eventually. Things like that.
Yeah.
Subcontractors, you want 5% or less of your top line revenue unless you're subbing out a majority of your work.
I was going to say that number can change drastically if you sub out a ton of work.
But that also
pushes your gross profit up.
Or down. In some cases. So like we were doing a call with one of our TradeWinds members
and their gross profit
was low, but their subcontractor expense was way up there, 40-50% or something. And I'm like, "Well, yeah, that's why your gross profit's low." Those subcontractors are making all the profit that you could make. That's why you want to employ the people, not sub it out, do it in-house, and then you get to make all that money.
Yes.
So, but if you achieve those benchmarks, materials at 20% or less, field labor at 20% or less, and then subcontractors at 5% or less, that's going to leave you with 55 to 60% gross profit. Okay?
Yeah.
And that's the target. That's what we're shooting for. And as long as we're factoring field labor cost, field payroll, above that gross profit line, then we can use 55 to 60% gross profit as a good number. There's a lot of guys that are like, 55 to 60, shoot, I'm 80% gross profit. And they're a one-man show, and they have no material going, or I'm sorry, they have no labor going to their gross profit numbers. And so, yeah, you will have 80% gross profit if you're doing that.
Yeah.
But these are for full-fledged businesses. When you have a team of people and you're able to keep all of your field labor at 20% or less and all of that.
Yeah. When you're a one-man show, these numbers are skewed drastically in two areas. It's usually gross profit and net profit.
Yeah.
Like those are the two areas that do not match.
Yeah.
And you're usually, like you were talking about earlier, if you're subbing a bunch of stuff out and like the gross profit of work performed is high. But gross profit that you've performed is low.
Right.
That's why those numbers are different.
Right. So now we go below the line. So now we have three,
if that makes sense,
benchmark numbers for things that you're going to want to track. You have all these outliers. You got vehicle expenses. You've got, you know, licenses and fees, and you've got professional fees and software fees, and you got tons of things. You know, fuel
tools.
And all of those things, like you got tons of things that chew up your net profit, but the three bigs to watch out for are your marketing. You want to keep your marketing at 8% or less.
Yeah.
If you are stable in the market and you're not trying to grow, you want your marketing around 6%. If you are trying to grow, you can go 8 to 10% on marketing. You want to try not to do more than that. Office payroll, you want your office payroll to be 15% or less of your top line revenue. So if you're bringing in 100 grand a month, you want to be paying your office staff in total 15 grand a month or less.
Yeah.
And you want to keep your total expenses, so those two expenses total, to be 23%. The total expenses to run the company, the net expenses, you want to be 30% or less of your top line revenue. And so that will leave you with about 20% net profit. And if you can pull off all of those, 20% net profit is industry-leading net profit in the home service space. And so, you know, those are great numbers. Now, those are benchmarks.
There's always outliers.
There's a lot of, well, that's a lot of benchmarks. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That's 9 benchmarks. I don't know if I've ever had a month where I hit all 9 on, like, in a month. Maybe 1 or 2 months in our company's history I've actually hit all 9. But some months I'm over on marketing. Some months I'm over on field labor. Some months I'm over on materials. You know, some months I'm over on office payroll. Like, it just, you just never.
Yeah.
But you can't throw caution to the wind simply because you missed one, right? That's why you track all of these, is because if you track them all.
Yeah, to track them all.
You're probably going to be okay.
Yeah, you have to track them all as if they're one.
The other thing to consider there is, once you know your overhead for your company, then you now know how much top-line revenue you have to do to break even each month.
Well, you know how much top-line revenue you have to do in order to make 10% net profit or 20% net profit.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Yes, but but what I'm saying is, like, so I'm just going to use round numbers again. A business with $60,000 a month in overhead. So those are your net expenses.
Okay.
If a business is doing 60% gross profit,
yep.
Then, and they have $60,000 a month in overhead, then they have to do $100,000 a month in revenue to make $0.
Yeah.
And so, but here's the cool thing. Once you've paid your bills, once you've paid those $60,000 in bills,
everything over is profit.
Now, when you do $120,000 in overhead,
yep, you made $20,000 in profit.
Not $20,000, because that $20,000 is still a 60% gross profit.
What's 60% of 120?
No, it would be 60% of 20.
Oh yeah, you're right.
So that'd be $12,000 in net profit. So
you are correct.
So, and that's part of why it's very important to get your gross expenses on the right spots on the P&L, because your net expenses should be fairly consistent each month. Yes, you're going to have outliers. You know, you're not going to have to replace tires on every vehicle every month.
Yeah.
Right.
You're not going to have 3 broken windshields in 1 month.
Well,
you're not going to have a wreck where you
I've had three in one month, but like the next month, you're not going to have 3 more.
That's what I'm saying. Those are outliers,
yeah,
like you said before, when you started.
But once you have a general average overhead for your company and you know where your company performs on the gross profit side of things, well, now you have revenue targets to where as soon as we break this much revenue, it's all profit. It's all net profit. All gross profit becomes net profit.
Yes.
And so, so now, like, again, using that example, a company that does 60% gross profit and they have $60,000 a month in overhead, they need $100,000 a month in revenue to break even and make $0.
Yeah.
And then once they hit that, now they should turn on the afterburners and go into overdrive and try to get as much more revenue as they can, because they've already paid the bills that month. And so now every dollar of gross profit flows all the way to the bottom of the P&L, straight to net profit, because you've already paid the bills.
Yeah.
And so we do this in our company. I threw out, like, literally this last month, I threw out a financial carrot and said, okay, if we hit X, I'm taking everybody to dinner on me.
That was in March, right?
That was for March.
Okay.
And then it was looking like we were going to hit X, and so I threw out a bigger carrot. And I said, if we do Y,
we're also going to the tip bar.
I said, I'm giving everybody $150 cash in the company. Everybody, regardless of your role. Part-time CSR, my virtual assistant, everybody's getting $150. And so it gives them something to drive for. And it was an incentive for me to kick them into overdrive, because I know that, so we surpassed our first goal.
You know that if they reach that, regardless of me paying them $150, we still
ahead.
Made money
yeah.
at Smedley Plumbing.
Yeah.
That's why.
Right.
All right, so you've newly started your company and you're trying to pinch pennies. However, you don't realize the biggest thing that's hurting you right now is not gathering all of your information into one spot and making it super efficient for you to use. So the answer is Field Pulse. It gets you off of paper tickets. It gets you off of all of that crazy office work at the end of the day and reconciling all that stuff. And it lets you organize everything with ease. It puts it all into the computer. It actually puts it all into the cloud. So it's not even putting it on your computer. And it lets you organize your customers. It lets you organize all of your service calls. Heck, it'll even route you to your service call. And the best part is, even after all of that, you'll probably realize about a 100% growth in your business just in the first year of using Field Pulse. So if you'd like to check out Field Pulse and see what great looks like, click on the link in the description of this show.
And so that's the perk of knowing your numbers really well. And so a problem comes in. So like to Tim's question, some of these guys try to factor net profit on a job and you can't do it. You can only factor gross profit on a job.
I mean, you can, but it's after the job's over. Well, like, what's the point?
You can't factor net profit. Like, they try to go into a job pricing it to achieve a certain percentage of net profit.
That's what I said. You can only do it after.
Yeah.
You can't go into a job bidding it trying to get 10% net profit, because there are variables that you don't understand.
Right.
There are things that are going to happen that you don't know.
Yeah. And so you've got to price things based off of that. And so then...
Based off of gross profit.
Based off of... Well, you have to set your pricing based off of your desired net profit. And so another exercise that we do with guys in Tradewinds, and this is very difficult to explain. However, I'm going to explain it. But this is,
dude,
this is
try
one
to,
of those.
If you are listening and not watching, like, even if you're watching, this is
hard to explain.
This is one of those things.
See
that,
it on a computer.
This exercise works if you're looking at the same Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah.
That Mitch is laying the stuff out on. It's very difficult to see in your head.
Essentially, what we do is I don't really like a lot of those hourly rate things. Because like those hourly rate calculators and all of this stuff,
they don't work.
Usually, believe it or not, a lot of times if you ever see a free hourly rate calculator online for your home service business,
it confuses you more than anything.
Usually that is a click funnel for some coaching program somewhere where they're like, hey, this person doesn't know how to factor their hourly rate. So we're going to go pitch them our coaching program. That's usually what it is. But, I don't like those because those are isolated and it tries to take like it, you can't factor in the volume of work and the only way to really set your hourly rates properly is to factor in your volume of work. And so the only way to do that is to do it in the past and take what you've learned from the past and apply it to the future. And so what we would do is we would take like a 3-month snapshot of somebody's performance in their business. And we do a whole 3 months because we want to do a whole quarter. A quarter is a cycle in business. And there are quarterly expenses that if you tried to do it just for a month snapshot, you may miss a quarterly expense.
Yeah. We talk about this a lot, Tradewinds, for sure.
Yeah. We want to look at a whole quarter. And so what we're going to do is we're going to look at a whole quarter's top line revenue. We're going to look at a whole quarter's number of task hours we sold. And we're going to look at a whole quarter's net profit. And before we just start changing our price to achieve net profit, we have to go look at those benchmark numbers and see, okay, before we even start changing our price, are we losing our ass on expenses? Are we losing our ass on field labor?
Yeah, are we paying 25% in marketing, and that's why those numbers don't add up?
Right. Yeah. And so like, we want to make sure that we're being as thrifty as we can on the front side before we start just jacking our price all willy-nilly. Yeah. So once we know we're thrifty on the front side, and let's just say we had a net profit of 10%.
Okay.
And again, using round numbers, let's say we had a net profit of 10%. We sold 100 task hours and our top line revenue was $100,000.
Okay.
Well, we want an extra $10,000 of net profit because we want 20% net profit.
Yeah.
Right? And so now what I'm going to do is I'm going to take that 100 task hours that we sold and I'm going to divide that into the $10,000 of profit that we would like to have had. And that's going to tell us how much we need to adjust our hourly rate.
I feel like I need to give you a whiteboard.
Yeah. And so, again, top line revenue of 100 grand, net profit of 10,000. So that's a 10% net profit. We would really rather have 20% net profit.
Yeah.
And so what we would do is we would take our shortage, which is 10 grand.
Yep.
And we divide that into the 100 hours that we sold.
Yeah.
Because essentially we're in the business of selling task hours.
Yeah.
And so we're going to find that we need to move our hourly rate up by $100 a task hour.
Yes.
And if it doesn't even matter what you were charging before. Notice how we didn't put our what we're charging in that quotient. It's only top line revenue, net profit, number of task hours sold.
Yeah.
And then we look at the deviation from where we landed to where we wanted to be, and then we divide that into the hours we sold and say, okay, if we were charging $100 a task hour more, all things being the same, we would have hit
reach our benchmark,
our 20% net profit.
Yeah.
And so that's how we coach our guys in Tradewinds to adjust their pricing. But keep in mind, that comes with the heading first of making sure we're thrifty on our expenses on the front side.
Yeah, and I will say this, just to add on. If you're in Tradewinds and we haven't done this for you yet and you want to know, hit us up.
Yeah.
Because full transparency, most of the guys think they have their hourly rate figured out. If you haven't, let's go over it.
Well, and a lot of guys are hard-pressed to move their hourly rate.
Some of them want to do it every week.
Well, no. What I mean is they're resistant to move their hourly rate. Oh, I can't charge any more than I am. I already get enough pushback whatever the case may be. And it's like, dude, the goal is not to charge the least. Believe it or not, the goal is actually to charge the most.
Well, it's to charge the most minus 20% to reach 80% of conversion.
Right, right. That. Yeah. You want to...
That's a whole other conversation for a whole other day.
The goal is to charge the most. Like, the race to the bottom is not a race anybody wants to win.
The goal is to get the most per job in your area.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
Charging the most or not.
If you're walking into a bid and the person's like, I've already had two other people bid it, and you're thinking, well, I got to come in at the low number if I want this job, you're racing to the bottom. That's not a race you want to win. So your goal when you walk into a bid where two other people have bid it is to learn as much as you can about those two other people so that you can exploit the holes in their value proposition. Okay?
Yeah.
And
or
so
a sales process, however you want to look at it. You're right.
Yeah. So how this works is okay, Rinky Dink Plumbing bid this job at $5,000.
Rinky Dink.
Gopher Mole
That's
Plumbing.
Good, dude.
Bid this job.
Gopher Mole? Are you just trying to make me laugh? Yeah. Gopher Mole and Rinky Dink?
Gopher Mole bid this job at $7,000. And my math is coming out to $8,000.
I love you, man.
And so now I've got to convince the customer why it's better to spend more money for me than for those cheap guys.
Yeah.
Right? And you can always like
you could nickel and dime this for hours.
Well, you can dance around things that don't matter for hours with this. Better quality and we're better all this. Everyone says they're better. Those other two companies said they were the best too.
Yeah, they said whoever you have come in here after, whether it's Smedley Plumbing or not, they're not as good as me.
So what you have to do is you have to find the customer's insecurities and you have to leverage those against the other two contractors.
Now we're getting on another topic.
And so you find that the customer is insecure, like, oh, I've heard of so many people being taken advantage of and all of this. Well, cool. So we have this neat thing called the 10,000-hour guarantee where we guarantee that all of our plumbers have 5 years of experience or 10,000 hours, right? So now all of a sudden I'm putting our company in a better position than those other two because now the customer's questioning, well, I don't know how much experience those other guys have. They make sure all their guys have the 10,000 hours, right?
Yeah.
And so then you start...
Well,
maybe
you're creating
value is
what you're doing.
And then you know, the other companies wanted 50% down. Or whatever else. Now that's a little steep. Like we only do 20% down to book a big job like this. And so now you're creating more trust with the customer because you're asking for less up front.
Yeah.
Right. And then you talk about some of your community work that you do and things like that to make them feel good about using your company and feel good about spending more money. And if they're the right customer for you, they'll choose you. They'll spend more to shop with you.
Yeah, that's the like of the no like and trust that we talk about all the time.
And unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there that have convinced themselves that people only buy from the lowest priced item. and I'll dispel that myth in one.
dispel that myth.
In one quick statement.
Mitch hasn't been drinking today either.
No, it's all water.
It's all water.
If that were true, then everybody under the sun would own the base model car.
Yeah.
Nobody would own anything over the base model. If price was the only thing that mattered, nobody would own more than the base model.
No, and there'd only be one fast food restaurant that sold burgers. There'd be only one that sold tacos. There would only be one gas station.
Right.
There would there would be no Target. There would only be Walmart.
Right. So, you know, that statement right there is enough to convince anybody, okay, there's people want more than just a cheap price. They want value.
Value, 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 value.
Right. And so, in other words, if let's talk commodities for a second. If I went and bought a case of Coke at...
Is Coke a commodity?
Yeah,
I
totally.
Guess technically it is.
Yeah. If I went and bought a case of Coke at a grocery store for $20, and then another grocery store had a deal where it was like, we'll give you 50% off produce if you buy a case of Coke.
Okay.
Okay.
I get where you're
going. So now I'm actually spending more money.
Yeah.
Right? Now, what's funny is their case of Coke might be $25. Okay?
Yeah. But the other one may have
been $12. But they have a value add.
The other one may have been $12.50.
Right. Well, I mean, one's 20, one's 25, but one comes with value adds of, you know, other discounts that lure you in for other purchases and all of that.
Well,
it's
the same thing. I know most of our guys are plumbers. It's the same thing as if you go to Ferguson. Hey, if you buy a jug of R22 or R410 or whatever, we will give you 12% off of the rest of your purchase in that designated space. And it doesn't even necessarily mean that it's plumbing fittings or flappers or whatever, sheet metal fittings, circuit boards, whatever, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
They are doing the same thing.
You could even do something where it's like for every $100 you spend, you get an entry into a drawing for a prize.
Ferguson does that all the time.
They do it all the time.
Yeah.
Especially for March Madness.
Yeah. If you buy five jugs of R410, we'll put you in this drawing for, you know, X amount off of your next 3 months' tickets.
Yeah. And so now the customer has more incentive to spend more money with you. So don't think you have to race to the bottom and don't think you have to charge the bare minimum. That's essentially what we're getting at there.
And I will say, just we'll wrap this topic up, but the race to the bottom on the community pages, the race to the bottom, regardless of what's going on, is not the way to build your business.
No.
It is the way to get your business off the ground. Some times.
Yeah.
Mitch has said this on the podcast a lot. When he first started, he would literally take, if he had a call, he would do whatever it took to make a sale.
Yeah.
Because
the
value in the sale wasn't necessarily the money. The value in the sale for him was to gain customers and for that customer to then tell everyone else that he provided quote unquote five-star service and it was excellent.
Yeah.
Okay. But that being said, it was for something else other than money.
Right.
You know what I mean? So when you're getting off the ground, it's no holds bar.
Yeah.
Once you've established, what got you here won't
get you there.
Once you've established a foothold, that is no longer an exercise that you want to take on.
Right.
You want to be at a point where you are charging a competitive rate and growing your business. At the beginning, you got to do whatever the fuck it takes.
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily what we're talking about here.
Right, right. Once you're up and running.
To wrap that up, Tim,
I hope that answered your question about how to charge and everything else.
Tim, if it didn't, and we need to have a Zoom call, hit us up.
Yeah, we'll get you figured out. But ultimately, get a good pricing structure set up and rolling, and then stick to that pricing structure.
Yeah, and also, Tim, just one more thing. Red stag hunting in New Zealand. If we got to put something together where Mitch and I come down, maybe bring some Tradewinds members. Fuck yeah, dude. Let's do it.
I'd love to see what it looks like, what it costs.
I would love to see what it costs.
Yeah.
That being said, I don't want to get off topic. We're already at 52 minutes. We got one other thing we want to talk about. I've always wanted to go to New Zealand and check it out. I've always wanted to go. everyone says it's the most beautiful place in the world to go.
One day.
One day, man.
One day.
One day.
I gotta.
Man, it'd be
knock
fucking
a couple
awesome.
Of other things off first.
Do you?
Well, yeah.
No, you don't. If Tim calls and says, "Hey, I got you a free place to stay," and all you gotta do is pay for tags, you're like, "Oh shit!" I guess TradeWinds is playing for some.
I still got
flight
knock
tickets
some other
to
things
go.
Off first.
Hey. That being said, Tim, I'll leave Mitch here.
There you
I
go.
Will come down and see you, buddy.
Okay, next topic that we want
to talk
about,
buddy,
is
kind of swash that one up a little bit.
I want to work with some newer business owners that may not know about business insurance or this facet of business insurance, and this is called a premium audit.
Mitch is still mad about this from last month.
Well, yeah, I'm mad at any.
I'm mad at all insurance. You know what I've been through.
I'm mad at any business that can reach into my bank account and take money out whenever they feel like it.
First off, for those businesses that are, if you're on automatic withdrawal for monthly anything, I say don't do it.
Well,
Janine and I don't do anything for it regardless. If you don't take a check from me, I'm out.
Most places will not give you that option.
Yes, they will.
No, what I'm saying is a lot of places, you'll have the option, but it's foolish. So, for instance, it's like a 10% insurance discount if you set up for EFT, right? So, like, nobody's going to choose to pay 10% more to write a check for something that they're going to have to pay for anyway, right?
Man, it's
I'll
not,
take the 10% discount, and I'll take the EFT.
It's not... I've never heard of anyone charging 10%.
Oh, it's huge.
Mine are like one.
It's a lot.
Our farmers, so just as an example for TradeWinds, mm-hmm. is one.
If we
don't do it, fuck them.
Right. Well, a lot of it too might be the differences in insurance, right?
Of course it is.
So, but you're going to have two areas of your insurance where you can go through, you'll have to undergo what's called a premium audit. And I'm going to explain what it is first.
Go ahead.
What it is in work comp and in general liability, you are, let's talk work comp. They can't give you a good estimate for what your work comp is going to cost unless you give them some numbers to work from.
Yeah, to get a bid, you have to go to, they say, what's your gross going to be this year? And you say $100,000.
No, for work comp, it has nothing to do with your top line revenue. Work comp has everything to do with your employees, how much your employees make.
Oh, I thought I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about liability.
Nope.
I apologize.
So work comp is based on the number of employees you have, where those employees physically work in the company, and how much they make.
And what they do when you're in plumbing and HVAC. Does that?
That's what I mean, where they physically work in the company.
Well, and what they do. Do they work with gas?
That's,
no. Yes.
That's what,
you know
I, mean,
what I mean,
where they physically work.
Yeah.
So if you're a plumber and your plumber is physically working as a plumber, then he's going to be in a plumber's class code for work comp. If you're clerical and you have like a CSR that never sets foot in the field, then they're going to be class coded as a clerical worker, okay? If you are young in business and starting out, you will most likely have to, as the owner, your employee class code is going to fall under the craft that your business does. So, in other words, when I first opened and we first hired a couple of employees and we had to get work comp, I was classified as a plumber, okay? So,
yeah. Let me ask you something. Do plumbers not? So, when you do HVAC, you can have HVAC with gas or not.
Yes.
You can also have HVAC with natural gas or propane. Like, is there a subclass for plumbers?
Well,
whether it's natural gas,
that's
propane.
That's more on your general liability, just as. You have to tell them the types of work that you do, the hazards that you're against.
Well,
work comp, it is just plumbers.
Just plumbers.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but they, you know, you're like, hey, I need a year's worth of work comp insurance. Okay. How am I going to price that out? I need to know how many employees you have, and I need to know how much money they're making, and I need to know what they do, right?
Yeah.
And so you have to accurately estimate how many employees you're going to have throughout the year and what your employees are going to make throughout the year, and give all of that information to your insurance company. And then they'll send you a premium. And cool, you pay it, you sign up, you're paying insurance all year long. Then at the end of the year, the insurance company will audit you. And again, we're only on work comp for right now. And the insurance company is going to audit you, and they're going to say, okay, you said you had, you were going to have 6 employees in the field and 4 in the office, and you said that your payroll was going to be X for the field and Y for the office. And now that it's the end of the year, we're going to look at the actuals. How many actual employees did you have in the field? And how much was their payroll? And how many actual employees did you have in the office? And what was their payroll?
Yeah.
And if the numbers are different than what you estimated, then the premiums would be different. And this is why I disagree with work comp premium audits. If you underestimated, if you said, I'm going to have 6 employees in the field, 4 in the office, and we're going to have 600,000, I'm just using round numbers, 600,000 in payroll in the field and 400,000 in payroll in the office. Well, let's just say that you have extra employees in the field and they were making more money, and you have extra employees in the office and they were making more money. The insurance company has the legal right to go back and charge you more because you are actually riskier than what you said you were going to be. You said you were going to be 6 employees in the field and 4 in the office worth of risk. And now that you were 8 employees in the field and 5 in the office worth of risk, they'll actually charge you more. And then when they do these premium audits, they do the audit and they give you 30 days to make the adjustment. Okay. And so our first year in business, we went through this and we had a premium audit. And we, this premium audit was not for work comp. This was actually for general liability. General liability operates the exact same way.
Exactly.
Only the difference for general liability is it does define like what you do. Do you work with gas? Do you work with excavations? Do you work with propane?
Yeah.
Do you work with electricity? All of those things. But then the general liability is driven off of your revenue expectations. And that has its own set of problems right there. And
yeah.
So let me explain.
We're about to open a can of worms here.
Well, I'll first get done explaining how these audits happen and how you get caught off guard, and then I'll explain why they're bullshit. And so how the audits happen, like our first year in business, we did more revenue than we thought we were gonna. And so we had a general liability premium audit. And I got a note, I got a letter in the mail that said we owe $11,000 in extra premium and we have 30 days to pay it. And so that's when I learned, okay, it's because we underestimated how much revenue we were going to do. So now we have a general practice. It's written in our processes that anytime we are forecasting work comp and general liability, we always overshoot. Always. Okay? And we overshoot.
It's funny. I just wrote that down.
Yeah. We overshoot because if I told them I was going to have 6 employees in the office or in the field and 4 in the office, and I actually only had 5 and 3, and the dollars were less, the payroll dollars were less, then they will actually give you a premium audit refund.
Well,
because you were less risky than what you were paying for all year. It's similar to taxes.
I literally just wrote down, it's the exact same thing as taxes.
It's very similar to taxes.
We've talked about this a ton. Insurance is the biggest scam since government. Like it just is what it is. I'm not going to say this is what I would do, or I'm not telling anyone to do this. I would always underestimate and not care, because then I have the money in my business to decide what I want to do.
Yeah.
That being said, you would have to know that at the end of the year, you're going to have to set that money aside just like you would if it was taxes. And the reason I say that is because there is nothing you can do to overcome the man, per se. You're going to have to pay regardless.
Yeah.
I would rather have access to my money up front, knowing what I know now, if I could go back in time and tell my younger self that. Does that make sense?
It does, but here's the challenge for small business owners. That ventures off into the 14,000 things that they could consider to perform better, but they don't really need to, because we're not talking tons of dollars, right?
We're not talking tons of dollars now, but we could be talking tons of dollars later.
Right.
And we could also be talking tons of dollars for growing our business at a specific time. And if I could finance another vehicle because I'm holding on to that money and not paying insurance premiums and then setting whatever was left aside
right.
to pay for that later. Now that gets into the entrepreneurship that we try not to push well, on the podcast and in TradeWinds and all of that. But
the other reason that's a challenge is
you're right,
because
it's the same as taxes. It's the exact same fucking thing as taxes. I'd rather pay no taxes every quarter if there were no penalties,
right.
hold my money, invest my money, and then pay it later.
Yeah.
The problem is they charge you fucking penalties for not doing it.
Right. And
quarterly.
The other problem with trying to do that in the work comp and insurance space is you don't have the data. The data is not readily available ahead of time to learn what the different classifications are going to cost you if it's wrong later.
You say that that's got to be public information. That's over our heads as of now.
It is, but what I'm saying is it becomes. It's not like, okay, I know taxes are an average of 30% of profit, and so, like, you know how much profit you're going to have, right? You can forecast a lot of those kinds of things.
Yeah.
On our work comp audit, we have three different classifications for employees in our company. We have field plumbers, we have clerical, and then we have owner, they try to split up in a couple of different areas because they know you're wearing a lot of hats, right? And a field plumber is like $3 for every $100 of payroll, whereas clerical is less than $1 for every $100 of payroll. And so what you...
It's still got to be public. It's got to be a way for us to track it.
It's public, but the problem is, how do I know how much my guy's going to make this year? I don't. And so it's very difficult to try to say, I'm going to undershoot it and then just pay it later, because you might not have the money later. Because you don't know how much he's going to make, so therefore you don't know how much you've undershot.
You could play that both ways. I overshot it, but then you don't have enough money to pay your premium.
Well,
I mean, now, granted, it's a smaller number.
Right. The other thing is, like, so we just went through our work comp audit.
And work comp would be easier to do in this specific scenario than the liability would even be.
It can be.
There aren't as many variables.
Right. Let's just say this. If you were trying to hedge your bets on this, that is like business 3.0. And most of the listeners to this show are business 0.5.
That's why I said entrepreneurship and not what we necessarily right. teach on this show or in TradeWinds.
So I would not advocate for I don't even do this in my company. To where I intentionally shoot it low and then track what my difference is going to be so I have to pay them later. There's too many variables there for that. A guy could quit, or you could hire a guy on, and all of a sudden it changes your variables by dramatic amounts. And so what it's usually best to do is to take what you think that guy's going to make. Whenever you're supplying your insurance company with this information, it's usually best to take what you think your people are going to make and add about 20% to it. And so if I have a guy that I think is going to make about $100,000 a year, I'm going to tell my insurance company he's making 120. And so that way, let's say he has a badass year and he makes 120. Cool. I was spot on. Let's say he has a crappy year and he only made 90. Cool. I'm going to get a little bit of a refund because they were docking me on 120 and he actually made 90. Okay.
Yeah, you're right.
So
I hate it. Like, this is we don't have controversial topics, but this is one of those topics that you can go either way, and either way you go, it's still going to make you mad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Here's the part that makes me upset. It's horrible.
The part that makes me upset.
I fucking hate it.
Let's say you and I both own plumbing companies. And let's say you and I have the identical employee counts. But let's say my pricing is twice as high as yours. And so I pay my employees twice as much as yours.
Yeah.
But let's say we do the identical amounts of work. I have to pay more in insurance all the way around.
Yeah.
Because yeah, insurance, business insurance is not calculated based off of the volume of work you do. Business insurance is calculated based off of how much you pay your people and how much revenue you bring in.
Yeah.
And so you and I could have identical businesses. And let's say we both put in 300 water heaters a year.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's all we did. Let's say that let's just make it super simple.
Super fun.
You're a water heater business. I'm a water heater business. You did 300. I did 300. Okay.
Yeah.
Only I charge twice as much. Our risk to an insurance company is identical.
It should be the same.
We are 300 water heater installations worth of risk.
Yep.
But because I charge twice as much, I'm going to pay more in general liability because I'm higher revenue.
Yeah.
And because I charge twice as much, I can pay my guys more. I'm going to pay more in work comp.
Yeah.
Even though the risk to the insurance company is unchanged.
It's almost like you haven't been listening to me about the fact that insurance is a fucking scam.
Well, I understand. Like, we can say it's a scam 1,000 times, but that doesn't help our listeners navigate the scam, right?
Agreed. But so in this scenario here, okay, how do they navigate the scam?
Well,
to save themselves money. The easiest way is to pay your employees less, but that's the exact opposite of what we teach on this show.
Right.
Pay your employees top line revenue so you have a great. No, I know you're not. I'm just saying.
What I'm saying is most people.
That's extremely difficult to navigate.
Well, and most people think I got to buy insurance, so they call up an insurance agent and they get a price and they see the premium and they think they can afford it, and so they go with it, and they don't. They have no clue this premium audit's coming. And then they get surprised.
Those first 2 years, they're like, what the fuck?
Right. And so that's why I want to talk about this, is because that is coming, and that's a conversation you need to have. And it's an outcome that you steer, okay? In other words, if you're opening your company and you think you're going to do $500,000 in revenue in your first year, tell them $650,000. And then monitor it and remember that you told them $650,000. And closing in on $750,000 or $1 million or whatever, then you know that you're going to have a premium audit coming, and they're going to take a lot of fucking money.
You're going to have a premium offering coming.
They audit the premium no matter what.
You're going to have that no matter what. The problem is there's no way around it. That's the real problem.
As your business grows, there is a way around it. And that's what I'm arguing with our audit right now. When your business is small, there is no way around it. But the more you know, the more you can be prepared, right? And so somebody listening to the show may have never been through a premium audit. They may be in their first year in business, and now they know, I got to watch out for this. Call your agent. Your agent will help work you through, how far off are we? And your agent can even quote, like, okay, you quoted me this premium, and when I said we were going to do $750,000 a year in revenue, and we're actually tracking for $1 million. So can you quote me everything's the same. Can you quote me a premium as if we were $1 million? And they'll be able to help you kind of understand what that shortfall is going to be and what your audit premium is going to be.
Well, and that's one of the things we talk about at TradeWinds all the time, is you've got to know your numbers on a weekly basis so that then you can transcribe them to the monthly basis, and then you know your quarterly basis.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago, I did a Monday motivational about, hey, are you tracking, like, do you know where your numbers are at this quarter?
Right.
Well, if you're not tracking your numbers,
and
you can't go to your insurance agent at the end of the first quarter and say, hey, are we on track for X?
Yeah.
Or am I going to get fucked at the end of the year?
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Well, and if you aren't tracking your revenue throughout the year, you don't need to be in business.
Agree.
I mean,
that's kind of the point of what I just said. If you're not tracking them at a minimum every quarter, what ends up fucking happening is you go through 3 years without filing your taxes and you owe $80,000 fucking dollars.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You have got to track your numbers, know where your money's going.
I don't even care to help those guys because they don't even care to help themselves, right? So the guys that are running blind and not tracking any numbers, just stop listening. Like, don't even waste your time.
No, listen and contact us so we can straighten out your fucking numbers. But
no,
you just have
some dedication to yourself first.
Mitch is talking about 3 years. Like, if it goes a year and you're like, oh God, I gotta get my shit straightened out.
Yeah.
Like, straighten your shit out. But if you've gone three and you're like, well, fucking whatever.
Right.
Dude, come on, man. What the fuck are you doing?
So,
four, five, six. I know a guy that, I'm not shitting you, has punted his can 6 years.
Yeah.
He owes $240,000.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what are you doing? Well, I pay him $1,500 a month. You mean for the rest of your life? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah, that's...
those
fold up.
Those guys, you can't help, right? They don't. They didn't want to help themselves, and you can't want more for somebody than they want for themselves. And like, I love helping guys with their numbers, but I hate trying to help guys with their numbers that don't want help with their numbers. It's the biggest waste of my time.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
Now on the work comp premium audit, here's how you hedge your bets as your business grows. So we got our work comp premium audit, and they tell us we owe $2,500, and I'm like, bullshit, because we over forecast our numbers. We tell them higher payroll numbers than what we actually are going to pay these guys so that we're ahead of it and we get a refund every year. I would much rather pay a little extra every month to get a refund on the premium audit than get surprised with an $11,000 bill, right? And I'm not talking about like giving them my money for the year and then getting it back. Like I understand that's a tax-free loan. I get all that. However, the inconvenience of being surprised with an $11,000 bill ain't worth it for me.
Well,
when you had to pay it anyway, right? So I might as well pay it throughout the year, right?
Okay. I won't argue that point, but...
And so then...
I like to save my money.
Where it comes down to is like an R premium audit. They say we owe $2,500 extra. We start to looking at it, and they don't have... Like, they have our field payroll...
They don't have it classified correctly.
Well, it's higher than it should be, and they have our office payroll way low. And so we start, like, we ask for the breakdown. They'll give you an audit worksheet where they tell you everything.
Yeah, of course.
And so they have all of our field guys right, and they have all of our office guys right, except for me. They have me listed as a field guy. And keep in mind,
I haven't been in the field in 2 years.
Field guys pay, like, we have to pay about $3 for every $100 of payroll. Yeah, it's like 3%.
It's 66% higher, I think. So if it's $1 to $3.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact number, and I'm sure everyone's going to be different and every state's going
to
be different.
I think it's $1 to $3.
Obviously, your odds of having a work comp claim as a clerical worker is significantly different than your odds of having a work comp claim as a plumber, right?
Oh, yeah. What are you going to do, fall out of your chair and break your tailbone?
Right.
Stop.
So the rates are cheaper. Well, they have me listed as a guy that's out in the field turning wrenches and busting knuckles and
every day.
And ditches every day. And that's couldn't be further from the truth. Now, here's the thing. State requires that.
State requires you to be classified as a field?
Yes.
Even if you're a CEO?
A burden of proof is on me to prove that I am not in the field. And so
that's easy.
Well, yeah, we're disputing it right now. But
that's easy for you.
What I'm saying is because so many people are so accustomed to premium audits and they don't look into this, how many people would have just wrote him a check for $2,500 and said, well, that sucks?
Yeah. And man, we've been talking a lot of shit on insurance lately.
Well,
but
yeah.
You're 100% right.
But now what happens is once we reclassify this, they might actually owe me money.
Yeah.
And so we're gonna run that gamut and see where we're at.
Yeah.
So,
to your point, it is our, back in the day and the way people trust... I'm going to say government, but that's not what I mean. The way people trust businesses that are above their intellectual level or above their reach, they just trust them and think that they're looking out for them. But your message is they're not. You and I know that.
Yeah.
Those businesses are not looking out for you. Those businesses are trying to make money.
Well,
the burden to make money is on you. The burden to save money is on you.
Yeah, as a business owner, there's no shortage of people trying to get your money.
No, they're trying to fuck you out of every goddamn penny you have.
Yeah.
So spend the extra time, like you're saying, and know exactly what's going on. When an insurance company gives you an audit, like you're saying, don't just fold and say, right, oh, that's fine. No,
yeah.
Challenge them. Challenge them and say, why are these things happening? And then like you got, oh, Mitch is... classified as a field plumber.
Yeah.
No, I'm not. Well, yeah, you are. Don't write the check. Why am I? No, I'm not.
I'm not writing the check.
Challenge.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you are. I'm saying in general.
Yeah.
Challenge. It's sad that we've come to this place, like in the business world, but you have to literally challenge everything that comes your way when people are trying to squeeze you for 10 nickels.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, 5 years down the road, you may have pissed away $100,000, $150,000.
Right. So
I agree with you 100%, man.
I'm not saying you need to be a cynic, and I'm not saying you
need
to.
I kind of am.
Well,
I mean, let's be honest. it's not like it was 20 years ago. People are literally trying to squeeze everything they can out of everything. You're mm-hmm. trying to squeeze every dollar you can out of a service call.
Yeah.
An insurance agent is trying to squeeze every dollar he can out of you.
Yep.
And the only way to get past that is to be diligent and kind of be a cynic and look for every way that you can save money.
Well, what I'm saying is I'm not advocating for business owners to just refuse to pay anything. What I'm saying is if you're asking money of me, you have to have a really good explanation for why I owe you this money. I have to understand your explanation. And I never spend money unless I understand what I'm spending it on.
Yeah, unless you understand why I'm writing this check.
And so there's a lot of people that don't understand the premium audit. They would have gotten that bill for $2,500 and they don't understand it. And they just assume this is how insurance works. So they would pay it.
Yeah.
And so that's the difference between being cynical and just refusing to pay bills versus understanding what you're doing. And the benefit when you challenge yourself to understand every dollar you spend and where it's going and why, now you learn why you're spending the money. So in other words, my first time going through a premium audit, I was confused as fuck. And then I'm angry. Well, typically anger comes from a lack of understanding, right? And so now once I understood how premium audits worked, I flipped the script on them and said, no, I'm gonna play your game and I'm gonna shoot you high on revenue and I'm gonna shoot you high on payroll. Not overly high. I'm not gonna tell you we're doing 3 million when we only do one. I'm not gonna tell you I'm paying a guy $300,000 when I only pay him $100,000.
Yeah, you're not talking 66%. No, you're talking 5.
I'm talking hedge it up there's no point in saying, yeah, we're probably gonna do a million this year when I know we're on track to do 1.3. Right? That's going to be my general liability insurance is going to be off by 30%, you know? So, you know, changing that up and staying in tune with that is key. The reason I think all this shit is bullshit is because, like what we were just talking about, even on the general liability things with the water heaters, if you're a 300 water heater a year company and I'm a 300 water heater a year company, and let's say that we both got our quotes and we were priced the same. And then 20 minutes after I signed up for my insurance bill, I decided to double my pricing.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to go through a hell of an audit.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have a hell of a premium. And this is the frustrating part about it. Insurance companies charge you based on your risk. Okay. That's why 16-year-olds are higher to insure than 40-year-olds. That's why a Corvette is more to insure than a Chevy Express van.
Yeah.
Right?
That's why an 18-year-old can't have a Corvette and a 45-year-old can for $100 a month.
Right. Yeah. And that's why like my F-350 is more to insure than an F-250 is because they know that you're towing more with an F-350, right? So their risk goes up.
Well, and if it gets in a wreck, it's going to cost more to fix.
Right.
Or if the frame is fucked,
right,
we've lost more money.
So here's the challenge. Is and this is why people get so frustrated with premium audits. Any other world, let's just say the insurance company realized that you were riskier to insure than they thought. Okay. In other words, yeah, we'll quote you $100 a month for that Corvette, and then you go out and get 7 speeding tickets.
Yeah.
Well, okay, now we have to adjust your rates going forward. Okay.
Yeah, not going back.
But in the business insurance world with general liability and work comp, they can arbitrarily say you're riskier than we thought you were, and so now we're going to back charge you for risk that was never realized.
I don't want to get in a whole thing. I know we're running out of time. The gas thing that you wanted to get on for people not being able to buy water heaters and shit, set that shit aside. This is something you should take up.
Yeah.
This would be something that benefits everyone.
Yeah.
It's
absolutely.
It is 100% a fuck you to go back in time and say, hey, your risk was there.
Yeah.
But nothing happened, but we're going to fucking charge you for it anyway.
And I'm going to charge you extra for it, and you don't even have the ability to go back and make a claim.
No.
Right? In other words, I proved myself as less risky.
Well,
I did more revenue, more volume of work, paid my guys more, whatever, had no claims.
Their argument is, and I know this for a fact, their argument is, we're going to go back and charge you for that even though no claims have been made, but you put a water heater in 2 years ago or 8 months ago, and now it blows up, and we were covering you at that time.
Right.
That's their argument.
Right.
Like if the water heater blowed up and
hold on.
And I know where you're going with this.
Hold on.
But I'm saying that's their argument, and that's why it's legally an issue as of now.
Their argument is you put in a water heater 2 years ago and it could blow up. Not you put in a water heater at $4,000 2 years ago. Right? Because had you put in that water heater at $2,000, you may not have the premium on it.
But
it's still the same amount of risk to the insurance company.
I'm devil's advocating it here, okay? Technically, that's not true. Because if the water heater you put in 4 months ago before your audit, say the audit was today. Mm-hmm. 4 months ago, you put in that water heater, okay? Mm-hmm. That water heater floods that fucking house mm-hmm. because of work you performed, mm-hmm. okay? And you weren't paying the premium for flooding a house at that moment.
Right.
That is how they, and I want to be careful with how I say this, that is how they get away with it and why legislation is the way it is and why they're legally able to charge you more to make you pay that past rate to then ensure that you have a policy moving forward. I'm not saying they're not fucking you and they're not fucking everyone out there. I think it's complete bullshit, but that's how they're getting away with it.
But the problem is they're attaching it to revenue and payroll and not risk.
It's because it's the easiest way for them to assign a number.
Yeah.
That's why.
No, I get it. But that's, again, we're basing these premium audits on revenue and payroll and not risk.
I know, but that is how they get away with it.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying, I'm not disagreeing with you.
Right.
I think it's complete fucking horseshit. And I think if you were going to, like, battle legislation in Missouri to do anything, like, this would be one of those great things. The problem is there are so many lobbyists.
You're up against the insurance companies, right?
That's my point. Lobbyists are being paid by the insurance companies. And you can't do it. But until people know, like, people that have podcasts like ours and everything, and until you know, how do you understand it and how do you navigate it in your business, this is how.
Yeah.
And until about 50 businesses like yours rise up and say, hey, let's try to change this. Let's call Mark Alford and get it changed. It's not going to change, and it's only going to get worse. But you're right. It's complete fucking bullshit, man.
Right.
I mean, it just is.
Yeah.
So.
And it's just, it's one of those, like, I don't have the power to change it, but I do have the platform and the power to advocate for other people to not get is
fucked.
Caught off guard.
You mean fucked?
Well, you're getting fucked either way.
Okay,
the fucking's going to happen, but what I'm trying to prevent is somebody who thinks they squeaked through and didn't get fucked, and then all of a sudden, bam, they got fucked, right?
5-minute raping versus 20.
Yeah.
Agreed.
So, you know, I made a post about this on Facebook recently that premium audits are the final boss in the business.
I saw that. Yep. For the record, I was like, man, like, if I get in here, it's going to be 75,000 comments. Because I'm with you.
Dude, there was one person in there that commented, and they had a $30,000 premium audit. And it's like, okay, that's literally a cash grab for insurance companies to go back and grab
money.
Did
they battle?
I don't know.
You don't know?
But I just don't like the cash grab. The cash grab is the frustrating part about it.
I wish I could go back 7 years and say, Mitch, you need to get involved with your parents' insurance company and we should run that thing.
It wouldn't change anything.
We'd be making a fuck ton of money. That's all I'm saying.
So.
No, we couldn't have changed the outcome, but we could have been making some serious money.
Yeah.
Because insurance companies are literally fucking people.
Yeah.
They're literally fucking... It's taxes, government, which is taxes, insurance, and then healthcare.
Yeah.
Those are the top four, man.
Yep.
It's tough.
Yeah.
God, it's tough making
so,
money in this country.
Moral of the story is overshoot a little bit whenever you're telling your insurance agent what your top line revenue is going to be and when you're telling your insurance agent where people are in your company on payroll, field or office or whatever, and how much they expect to make.
And can I add one thing to that? If all of that stuff was a little over your head and you want to actually be able to break down your numbers and understand what's going on, sign up for Tradewinds for 1 month. We don't have a minimum.
Yeah.
Sign up for 1 month. Have a call with us. We'll break down everything, explain it to you face to face.
Yeah.
Exactly how it goes, line by line. okay, I understand all that, and then get out. There's no minimum like all the other fucking coaching groups out there.
Yeah.
You want to sign up for 1 month, sign up for 1 month and get the fuck out. We don't care.
Yeah.
We'd love to help you.
Yeah. Yeah, we're here to help in whatever capacity we can.
Yeah, we don't have minimums here.
Tim, thank you for your emailed question.
Great
guys,
question,
our
Tim.
Our emails are in the bottom of the description of these, so if you guys want to send us a question, shoot us an email, and we would love to answer it. So
yeah,
until next week, guys, we will see you later.